Welcome to the Great Awakening Empowerment Tools Podcast. This is Dr. Brent Davis reading Chapter 12 from my 2014 book, The Floral Hand of God, Secret Healing Codes of Flowers Revealed. The chapter title is In the Company of Those Who See. Introductory Remarks. Starting in the later 1950s, when I was just a young kid, decade by decade up to the present time, I have watched the persistent erosion of integrity. Up to the point now where trust and confidence in figureheads within the government and throughout the private business sector has almost vanished entirely. It has been a gradual erosion, a sort of slippery slope whereby people seem to be unconsciously accepting lower standards of honesty as the norm. The inability to identify and call out lying and misdirection that can be observed on a daily basis would seem to be linked to a loss of perceptive ability and the inner intuitive knowing of what is true. Chapter 12 recounts a personal experience of mine that emphasizes the need for us to strengthen our ability to recognize and avoid cloaked dishonesty. Wonderfully, there are vibrational frequencies found in special flowers that can help us to recover our inner knowing of what is true and enhance our alignment with what is genuine and virtuous. Reading now from Chapter 12, titled, In the Company of Those Who See. By the time 2007 arrived, I had been working clinically with my flower essences for about 6 years. When I received an invitation to the annual conference of the Association for Comprehensive Energy Psychology, ACEP, that year, it struck me that I should attend. I was looking forward to sharing my findings with respect to a new way of removing energetic disturbances that negatively affect the unconscious mind, upsetting many areas of one's life. There were two particularly noteworthy things that took place at that ACEP convention relating to the topic of this book. The first concerns what I found when I performed brief evaluations of the attendees. The second relates to something extraordinary that I saw. The conference was set up in the usual way. There were several tracks of speakers presenting workshops throughout the day, and at certain times, key presentations in a large lecture hall were attended by everyone. There were morning and mid-afternoon breaks, and one around lunchtime to allow attendees to visit the vendor section, where there were booths displaying items for sale, equipment such as biofeedback devices, stress reduction paraphernalia, books, and especially educational seminar information. My flower essence company had a booth there with literature describing how to use the flower essences to clear unwanted information from the unconscious mind and tester bottles of all the individual products. In my excitement over the prospect of sharing my findings with an audience that was used to working with the unconscious mind, I failed to take note of the fact that most psychologists and mental health professionals are prohibited or discouraged by their license from dispensing any type of supplementation to their clients. So it wasn't really a good venture for my company to attend. As the spokesperson for this new approach to healing, I nevertheless had a lot of fun. I also had the opportunity to test an important experimental question. Here is how I did that. At one side of my company's booth, I had set up a portable adjusting table that served nicely to allow me to perform a brief diagnostic screening on visitors who wanted to learn about what I was doing. In my office, before I see new patients, they fill out a short but rather comprehensive set of questions about their history, chief complaints, etc. Here, of course, that was not done. So when an interested person wanted to be evaluated to see how the process worked, I had no knowledge of any of their complaints or history. It was basically blind testing. I used the screening method I had developed called holographic scanning. That procedure works in the following way. The participant lies face up with feet slightly over the edge of the table, to allow access to the examiner who is seated at the feet end of the table. The examiner performs a specific type of leg length check originally developed in the chiropractic profession by a very intuitive doctor. The legs are positioned so that the leg length is even, and the feet are held in such a manner that the heels of the shoe can be brought together so they touch. At the beginning of the test, the bottom of the heels should be even, right and left. A silent questioning process is then begun that takes place between the examiner and the participant. The examiner poses questions to the superconsciousness of the participant, whose leg length will change in response to the questions posed. The participant has no idea as to the nature of the examiner's test questions, and therefore has no way to interfere with the outcome of how his leg length changes. The examiner calibrates the test initially to find out where the yes and no responses lie. That is to say, whether the right leg shortens, signaling a yes, or whether it is the opposite. Most of the time, a right leg shortening signals a yes response from the body-mind complex of the individual being tested. The original way this method was used by the chiropractor who developed it was to screen the body to find out in which way the patient's body might be experiencing spinal distortion. For example, the examiner would picture each cervical vertebrae and project the image of a right rotational distortion, asking the body to indicate yes or no, and then the opposite of a left rotational distortion. The participant's superconsciousness knows exactly the physical status of its attached physical body and will signal that information to the examiner if he can access it clearly. In this example, we would find out if the particular vertebrae was rotated to the right, to the left, or if it was properly positioned. With that screening information, one can then proceed to a manual exam and other methods of confirmation if desired. It is a brilliant screening tool that saves a great deal of time. I adapted this test for screening of the flaviceps I have developed. I teach this method in an instructional video to health professionals as a rapid way to initially match potentially needed flower frequencies to each individual patient or client. The procedure consists of projecting the image of each flower onto the superconsciousness of the recumbent participant. His leg length will change in a manner to indicate yes if the body has a positive affinity to the totality of the flower's frequency, represented in the image, or the leg will remain neutral if the particular flower in question has no benefit. Very rarely do we see a no reaction in response to a given flower. What still amazes me to this day is something that initially I did not expect. I discovered that this flower frequency matching system is astonishingly diagnostic. In other words, without knowing anything about a person and by blindly finding the flower frequencies that the particular participant's higher consciousness or soul complex chooses through a yes response, in terms of compatibility, we find a great deal of information relating to specific internal blocks that, when removed from an individual, lead to progress in his life. One of the first participants that I screened at the ASEP conference was a senior member of the organization. He was a psychologist with considerable clinical experience, and he had a mastery of several different techniques for removing unwanted subconscious programming in his clients. He had been treated with numerous clearing techniques by colleagues attending this very conference. I explained to him how the holographic scanning process works, and soon he was lying down on the exam table for me to begin. In just a couple of minutes, I found the flower frequencies he needed. Out of the 38 basic level 1 flowers for which I screened him, he only needed 2. That indicated to me that he was pretty clear, and that is unusual. I assumed that many of the clearing techniques he had been treated with had helped him. I remember that one of the flowers he needed was Heartmind, the one that I mentioned using on Maria. I told him that I found he had a, quote, hole in his heart, end quote, from the loss of a loved one. And I asked him to whom that might be referring. Whom had he lost? He looked straight at me with a pained expression and quietly said, "My mother. It's my mother." And then he said to me, "How did you know that?" I replied, "It is the flower that told us." The point is, I was not employing some psychic technique. All I was doing was matching the resonance of the flower to his unconscious mind, which was linked to his soul need. When we used the second part of my protocol, muscle testing with the test phrase, "The loss of my mother leaves a hole in my heart," his muscles stayed strong, facilitated, indicating that his unconscious mind was coherent with that statement. In other words, it was true that the loss of her was causing a hole in his heart. That hole in the heart phenomenon is a very common hidden problem and can really weaken and disable a person. When I administered a couple of test drops of Heartmind to him lingually and had him repeat the test phrase, the statement was no longer true. There was an instant quantum transfer of restorative frequencies. That is to say, the Heartmind flower frequencies had energetically closed the hole. I told him that one bottle of the product would likely clear the problem, which all previous therapies and therapists had not detected, and he shook his head in amazement, assuring me that in fact he did sense that would give him relief of his great burden. He had felt an instantaneous shift after the drops touched his tongue. During the course of the conference, I had the opportunity to perform the fast holographic screening on about 30 highly informed and well-trained health professionals. Many times I heard the refrain, "How did you know that this is the one area that has been so resistant to change?" Or, "How did you know to create this particular and very specific combination of flowers?" referring to the flowers that showed up to assist. The whole event was a heartening experience of confirmation. I knew that with my beloved flowers, I was in the company of those who see. In the vendor area of holistic conferences, there are always people who are fun to meet. I noticed that in the booth next to mine were two women who were demonstrating how to balance the energy field of a client using a type of light wand. There was an aura of integrity that shone from their display, and I had the impression they were earnest in what they were teaching. There was a lull when no one seemed to be around our two booths, so I took that opportunity to go next door and introduce myself, and I'm so glad I did, because it was a pleasure to meet Frances and Marie. Frances was the inventor of the light wand therapy device, and Marie was her most advanced student who had come from across the country to assist her at the convention. Frances was truly congenial when I approached and began speaking with her. She mentioned that she had observed what I was doing from her booth and hoped that the participants to whom I had administered test drops would fully realize the power of transformation that was taking place from the flowers. Since I had not performed the flower screening process on her, I wondered how she had come to that conclusion. I was soon to find out. Frances demonstrated on me how the light wand works, and I was quite astonished at its action. In her hands, it was so powerful that it was able to make deep corrections in cranial compression within my skull. I could feel it acting. Later, Marie used the light wand on me, and although I felt its benefits, it was not working as deeply. Time and time again, I have witnessed the phenomenon of the same instrument delivering different therapeutic outcome in the hands of different therapists. That is why holistic healing will always be an art in addition to a science. That is also why it is foolish to try to establish rigid controls in energy healing experiments. Because though we may be able to control the physical framework, we cannot nor should we try to standardize the energy of the healer. It is naturally variable, and there is always room for the evolutionary advance in a healer's capability. While Marie was working on me, I noticed that Frances had a fixed and very focused gaze. She was looking intently to her left across the hall at a booth 30 or so feet away. There was someone lying on a massage table with an operator, busy at work, running energy patterns over the female participant's body, and occasionally vigorously massaging and pressing areas on her back. Frances did not waver in her concentration and continued her focused gaze for a couple of minutes. I wondered what she was seeing. Then she looked away, shaking her head with a disgusted expression. Quote, "Do you see what he is doing?" she asked me. I looked over to the booth she had been observing and noticed three or four people lined up to register with an assistant for a session with the operator. There seemed to be a dull energy around the whole area, quite different, for example, in comparison to Frances' booth. I wasn't drawn to go nearer to the therapist to observe any more closely, but initially I didn't intuit anything more than that. Frances continued, quote, "This fellow has been at conferences before, and I have watched him at work. He is really quite talented at what he is doing. He doesn't have any formal training, and yet people are lined up to pay $600 per session. Can you imagine $600? If you don't notice what he's doing, let me tell you. He really has quite a bit of animal vitality to his energy field, and people feel substantially different after he works on them for a while. Little do they realize that he must have quite a background in magic, and I do not mean the good kind. I can see that he is constructing energetic devices by the concentration and intention of his mind, that he is strategically placing in their spinal column to tap into their vital energy, which then feeds into his. Not only does he gain more power of the most dubious kind by this approach, but he also maintains a hook into his hosts, so that they are likely to keep calling him and paying him for his work. He is stealing from them, and he is keeping them happy at the same time. Quite an accomplishment, if you want to call it that. Ever since that experience, I have paid much closer attention to what might be core causes of energetic disruptions in patients that are frequently associated with spinal imbalances and discomfort. As I described in the last chapter, I was finally graced with flower mixtures that often undo the kind of damage that this fellow was inflicting. Teachers, amulets, and consciousness technologies. There is another type of energetic damage I often find in patients that is almost always a surprise and generally quite upsetting when discovered. When we do not see clearly and entrust our spiritual well-being and evolution to someone whose real motives are masked or who is just plain lacking in spiritual virtues, i.e., someone representing himself as a trustworthy guru or teacher, who in actuality is not clear, and therefore should not be giving direction to others' lives, we can find ourselves dealing with real problems. Just because someone has a convincing personality and may possess energetic or supernaturally strong abilities, it does not mean he or she has beneficent spiritual authority. This point is well illustrated from one of my patient case files. Carla sent me a digital image of her face, along with her history, so that I could consult with her by phone to try to get to the bottom of what might be, quote, cutting off her life force, as she described to me, and find some lifestyle changes and flower frequencies that could get her back on track. She was one of the most beleaguered and energy-deficient people I've ever seen. Over a period of about 4 months, Carla received many custom-blended flower essence formulas from me, and her progress was amazing. Before each consultation, she would send me new digital images, always with a non-smiling, resting expression, as I request, and her positive energy, evident in the photos and confirmed in our interviews, just kept building. She was so pleased with her progress that she referred Joan to my office when she happened to be passing through Nashville. She was a new acquaintance whom Carla had recently met at the spiritual retreat of a guru guy in California. For reasons I shall describe, I checked this fellow out and found that he had a highly commercial website. He seemed to me, unfortunately, to be a shameless self-promoter, representing himself as a, quote, manifestation of God. Guru Guy, Gigi, works closely with a group of Tibetan monks. All monks are not created equal. Can you say Dugpa? And presumably that gave him legitimacy. Footnote number 4. Dukpas are a class of Tibetan monks within which are members highly trained in the dark arts. One can only hope that the kind of picture of him I am painting comes from awareness and not judgment. You'll see why I think it is the former. When I started to examine Joan, I found that something was seriously disturbing the harmonious flow of bioenergy in her body. Her nervous system was in a state of reversed polarity. Her adrenals were being drained, and several important immune reflexes were blown. She was surely at risk for more serious illness. When I noticed that she was wearing a large chain around her neck, I asked to see what it was holding. Joan reached down and lifted from under her blouse a truly impressive piece of hardware. It was a massive crystal and gemstone amulet, meticulously made with carefully designed geometry, held together by gold and silver wrapped wire. It was clearly not a Dollar General purchase. When I asked, she told me that she had paid $1,100 for it. I asked her where she had obtained it, and that is how I found out about Gigi. It turns out that one of the guru's primary operations is to produce what he describes on his website as sacred jewelry, amulets, to promote the rapid evolution of spiritual consciousness. They are purportedly specially charged and blessed by him and the monks with whom he associates. I thought to myself, okay, maybe so. Then Joan allowed me to remove the amulet, place it across the room, and retest her using some advanced applied kinesiology muscle testing of reflexes. When the amulet was off her body and far away, all her previously weak reflexes returned to normal. I then repeated my testing for her benefit, showing her that when the amulet was on her body, she was essentially being short-circuited. When it was off her body, important physiology returned to normal. Since I have seen this type of phenomenon many times over the years, I addressed the issue in a tactful way, letting Joan know that some energy devices are tuned to frequencies that some people's bodies cannot incorporate. My own response internally was more volatile, wondering how many other people were being harmed by the powerful objects available from Gigi's website. There really wasn't much more I could say. I simply hoped Joan would choose wisely. We finished a productive session, and she went on her way, returning to California. I did not hear from Carla for a longer than normal period of time, but eventually she did send a new photo of her face. When she did reconnect with my office, she mentioned that Joan had briefed her about my findings with her amulet. Carla then went on to explain what a powerful influence Gigi was in her own life, and that he was helping her recover from her very traumatic past. She found comfort in his spiritual community. She was using his, quote, spiritually attuned and consciousness-accelerating jewelry. Carla's new photo was truly alarming. Her eyes that had been growing in clarity and light now radiated a dull emission from hollow sockets. It immediately called to my mind the Tibetan term hungry ghosts, which are purportedly a type of negative entity living between earth and hell. Something was really stripping her energy. Nonetheless, I had no option but to honor Carla's choice. It did not feel reasonable to me to try to oppose the humanly created energy emanating from Gigi's devices and organization with the utterly pure God force that comprises the frequencies and uncut flower essences. I told her that she should contact me again in 6 months to reevaluate. It is worth noting that there is a huge and growing number of frequency healing technologies, producing many types of hardware and processes that are supposed to help us break through our limitations and more rapidly progress in our evolution of consciousness. My advice is, please do not use any of those technologies or processes unless you have them tested by a practitioner who is trained and competent in the ability to measure subtle energy changes of your body when wearing the device or using the frequencies generated. Have at least one impartial observer test the way given invisible fields are influencing you. Vibrational technologies also include numerous methods of treating water, energy bracelets, geometric forms such as special pyramids, sound CDs, products taken in liquid form, and a long list more. So, what are safe and effective ways of clearing oneself and enhancing one's spiritual awareness? Initially, it is essential to practice what many of the best transformational thought leaders are espousing. That is, learn to be present and grounded in the moment without projecting into the future or ruminating about the past. Then it is helpful to understand and apply the practice of neti neti, a doctrine deriving from the Hindu philosophy meaning not this, not that. It is an awareness practice designed to help us avoid labeling things, so that we remain free from judgment, which creates a polarity distortion in the field of our mind. It is especially valuable when we do not see as deeply as we might like. Once perception is more highly developed, then it becomes more a matter of balancing awareness versus judgment. In the example earlier in the chapter, Frances described what she clearly saw and others generally do not see, so it was a matter of awareness, not judgment. It is understandable that she did not appreciate the energetic thievery that was surreptitiously taking place to the detriment of trusting conference attendees. It is surprising and wonderful that we can achieve a boost in the evolution of our consciousness and move closer to joining the company of those who see by using entirely pure, powerful, and rare flower frequencies. They can safely clear our negative unconscious mind and cancel or eject the energetic disturbances lodged inside our body and around our energy field. We shall explore in the next chapter the unassailable integrity of flowers that instills them with pure transformational power. Commentary. The 1987 movie, Broadcast News, with a sort of dark humor predicted, sadly, the current state of the absurd 24-hour news cycle that is actually nothing more than carefully crafted scripts. In 2020, Senator Rand Paul compiled a large sample of 6 o'clock news messages delivered by hundreds of stations around the U.S. The news anchors' messages were placed in a video tapestry on screen, and one after the other, when played, demonstrated that around the country, a script was being read by all the anchors that was nearly identical word for word. It was clearly not the reporting of news, but rather the delivery of a unified message to incite fear about the dangers of a dread infection. A different and even more pointed indictment of supposed authority figures is evident in the scathing remarks of retired editors of two of the world's most respected medical journals, the New England Journal of Medicine and the British journal called Lancet. The following quote is by Dr. Marcia Engel, who was an editor at the New England Journal of Medicine for over 20 years. Quote, "It is simply no longer possible to believe much of the clinical research that is published or to rely on the judgment of trusted physicians or authoritative medical guidelines. I take no pleasure in this conclusion, which I reached slowly and reluctantly over my two decades as an editor of the New England Journal of Medicine." End quote. The second quote is by Dr. Richard Horton, editor-in-chief at The Lancet. Quote, "The case against science is straightforward. Much of the scientific literature, perhaps half, may simply be untrue. Afflicted by studies with small sample sizes, tiny effects, invalid exploratory analyses, and flagrant conflicts of interest, together with an obsession for pursuing fashionable trends of dubious importance, science has taken a turn toward darkness," and his quote continues at length. "It is essential that we return to a heightened state of integrity and trustworthiness throughout the whole business sector, and of course interpersonally as well. The next chapter continues to explore that theme.